our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Denise Lee.
Hi, Denise.
Hey, Laura.
How are we going today?
Yeah, good, good, good. And you?
Yeah, not bad. Making it through end of the week, so got those, like, weekend vibes coming in.
Yeah, that's right. Thank God it's Friday.
Oh, thank God. Need it. So I guess we'll just jump straight into it. So there's a Royal Commission of Inquiry into security agencies following Christchurch. Pretty big deal. Why do you think this inquiry is so important?
Well, it is pretty next level when there is a Royal Commission. So that's about the, well, it is the top level or form of inquiry that you can get. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly the right thing to do. And it's something that we called for as soon as appropriate after the attack, because there is some questions that do need to be understood or answered around whether the tragedy could have been prevented, and asking the hard questions about whether security intelligence agencies had their focus in the right places. You know, that kind of balance between what we need to know, want to know, and should know. All of those things need to be, and it will be looking at the past, right? But what we need by doing this is assurance that going forward our lives will be safe.
Absolutely. And in amongst this conversation, of course, Simon Bridges has brought up something called Project Spear Gun, and I was wondering if you might be able to tell anyone who isn't aware of it, what is it exactly?
Yeah, so this was a debate that happened back in 2013. So currently we use a system for security called Cortex, and it's designed to protect organisations of national significance. Spear Gun essentially scans internet traffic coming into New Zealand and gives that extended degree of protection to New Zealanders. Similar systems are used in other places, so it's not a unique thing that we would be looking at. It's used in other jurisdictions. In 2013, the decision was made not to pursue that, and I guess some of it would be around people's quite significant concern about mass collection of data. But from my perspective, Laura, it was made on some real, in many cases, mistaken presumptions that everything that they said would be, categorised and captured and spied on. And that's not the case at all. So that's in a nutshell what Spear Gun is, scanning internet traffic coming into New Zealand.
Internet traffic being what people are searching for online, or internet traffic being what can be seen publicly on profiles?
Yeah, look, I apologies, I can't answer the exact detail. I suspect it might be a bit of both, but the way that it would work is looking at very detailed and very intelligent and clever algorithms that find trends. And only once a trend may be identified would intelligence agencies review them. So it's not like, my understanding is, it's not like intelligence agencies sit around reviewing all the material. There has to be some sort of answer or call to an algorithm first to even qualify for review. So it's not the mass collection of data and eyes in that I think some people have thought that it would be. But hey, we live in a changed world, right? We live in a changed New Zealand. I think we do need to have the discussion on whether this particular project or form is relevant for us now.
Yeah, and I think the thing about the terrorist in Christchurch is he wasn't particularly hiding, is another factor of this. He was pretty obvious online if you were looking at him closely enough. So it's kind of a question about how far do we need to delve into people's private internet activity, rather than sometimes it is just so obviously public.
Yeah, well, and then that brings on the discussion about Facebook, right, and their settings, because it's clear that he was quite obvious using their platform. But, you know, look, I get your point there, Laura, that, you know, there should be, this is why we're kicking off an inquiry, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
There should be at some deep level an assurance to New Zealanders that things that are obvious are getting noticed, picked up. But our question for the government of the day and New Zealand is, do we have the right tools to do that? Some things are obvious and they're right there in front of our face, but many aren't.
I might jump on to Jacinda Ardern's calls to tackle online hate speech.
Yeah, the Facebook call out.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm just curious, from a National Party perspective, how important do you think it is right now to be tackling online hate speech?
Yeah, well, absolutely important, because everyone should have absolute zero tolerance for violent hate speech, right? Mm. So it's totally appropriate that Facebook reviews its rules. They've admitted themselves that they need to. And in fact, I think it was yesterday that they said they're going to announce a ban on, I forget what the words are, like praise and support and representation of white nationalism and separatism. Mm. But I had to chuckle because they're starting to enforce it next week.
Wow.
So I wondered why there needs to be a gap between now and next week to monitor it or to, you know, crack down on it. But that's for them to answer, not me. But my point is, Laura, that, you know, look, hey, it's appropriate that they review their rules, and we need to have that discussion about how we tackle platforms that move very fast, are very complex, and we don't have ultimate control over.
Mm. I think hate speech is always a really tricky subject, I find, because it is such a hard thing to define. And I actually spoke with a barrister last year on this very subject, and he said for New Zealand, in terms of law, that New Zealand hasn't quite got to the point where there is a clear definition of what hate speech is. Do you think that is a fair comment?
Yeah, no, I think that is a very fair comment. It's an incredibly vexed area. Mm. So that line between hate speech and free speech, when people have diverse, sometimes, you know, I don't mean to be demeaning, but even quirky views, is how is that, where's the line towards, you know, where people go, hang on, that you've just stepped over the line. But one thing I think we'd all agree, right, violent hate speech is never, ever, ever, ever acceptable. But look, it's a vexed area, but I think that we need to give it our best effort. Otherwise we'd be passive bystanders, and that's just not appropriate.
Mm. National did come up in the news a few days ago in terms of comment sections on their Facebook page. Some of the comments were deemed by an academic, Chris Wilson from the University of Auckland, to be Islamophobic, and a lot of people were quite concerned that National had left those up on their Facebook page. I'm curious, what would you have to say to that?
Yeah, well, we have people who clearly, because it's our page, who moderate and who delete immediately offensive material. But you'd know, as do I, even on our personal accounts, I mean, I get, bless their hearts, I get trolls all the time that say incredibly offensive things. And the line between people saying offensive things that are clearly there, you know, back to free speech and their version of things versus violent hate speech and incredibly offensive, we're really comfortable that we moderate and draw the line actively. So I can't say that I've personally read or know the comments that have appeared, because there's so many that you know, people are engaging with our pages all the time, by the hundreds and thousands. So I'd love to see some of the comments that came up and see where what I think there, Laura. But the point is that we do moderate and are happy to stand by our decision around what constitutes free speech versus you want people to engage in discussion, right?
Yeah.
But not when it's harmful or hateful or downright offensive. We will not tolerate that.
Yeah, that's a very hard line to figure out where it is in terms of what is hateful and offensive.
And look, we wouldn't be the only political party pages that have to deal with this on a daily basis, if not an hourly or a minute-by-minute basis.
Mm. I'm going to shift on to some Auckland news because you and I both love that.
Yeah.
The ports of Auckland, there is conversation that government is looking to move them to Northland. So this is obviously a huge piece of Auckland economy. Would I be right in saying that?
Yeah, massive. Well, I mean, it's 100% owned, right, by Ports of Auckland and Auckland Council.
Mm.
So it is hugely important, those dividends, to Auckland ratepayers. And it is a massive piece of our economy, as you say.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess on this kind of issue, how many jobs do you think there are being had at Ports of Auckland?
Oh, I don't know, but yeah. I do know, and you may recall, Laura, I was a city councillor up until 18 months ago, so I went through the big piece of work where we did our own ports future study.
Yeah.
So this way predated the campaign, way predated some quick election promise by Shane Jones to move the jolly thing. And what we figured out back then was that if you just took away the vehicle processing facility, and you know, people talk about the car yard down there, so when you drive by and you see lots of cars waiting to be processed and heading to New Zealand, if you just took that bit away, there'd be a 10,000 job loss.
Wow.
So you've got to be really careful about... let's just say rushed coalition deal trade-offs for what signals you send and whether something like this that is of huge strategic infrastructure and financial importance to be used as a political football, is that really the smart thing? I'm not so sure.
Mm. I guess when I think about this issue, I think about its correlation to housing in terms of so many jobs being in Auckland and many rural areas of New Zealand not necessarily having the number of jobs for people to buy houses in those rural areas. So I'm curious if you think that's a factor that's coming into play.
Do you mean in terms of sort of heading as Ally New Zealand First strong desire to head the port up north and the economic benefits up that way?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, that's legitimate, right? Because we know that Northland has some serious deprivation on quite a few indexes. But you don't cut your nose to spite your face. So you've got to make sure that anything in the long term, or even medium term for that matter, whether the benefits stack up against the massive cost of doing that. So if you, for instance, make a move to help out some Northlanders, but at the same time you've just kneecapped some serious infrastructure and economic flow in Auckland, well, there's a lot of people in Auckland that are in need too. So you've got to outweigh it. I'll put it this way. When we did that Port Future Study at Council in 2016, that was a huge piece of work. Honestly, Laura, so much money, so much time, so much effort, huge amount of experts, and they came up with and involved a lot of stakeholders, not just paid expertise, a lot of stakeholders, and they came up with saying very clearly that it was not a good idea and it was not feasible to head things to Northport, and instead they came up with two locations that should be considered, because we know that eventually we're going to want to have more of our waterfront space in Auckland.
Mm.
But those two locations are the Manukau Harbour and the Firth of Thames.
Mm.
Well, that's not Northport.
No.
And it's certainly not on the list of New Zealand First trade-off deals for a coalition negotiation.
Mm.
Far from it.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to shift on to our last question of the day. My favorite, not necessarily my favorite, but one of my favorites, the personal question.
Yeah, you go for it.
Okay. My question today is, what is a book that has changed your life?
A book that's changed my life? Ooh. This is a tough one. Hey, I'm going to start by just saying, do you ever read hard copy anymore?
Yes, I am a lit nerd. I have bookshelves and everything.
Oh, do you really? Oh,
yeah, well, I'm still holding fast.
I did, but I was just thinking about this the other day, I've progressively lost my bookshelves, and they've turned into e-books, and I read on my phone, and then I kind of look over my teenage daughter's shoulders for what they're reading. I think that's my space now.
Mm.
I'm just trying to think of a book that I... you're stumping me this week.
Sorry, what can I say?
Can I make a throwback to a book that I read in my teenage years?
Absolutely.
That I felt had some really cool analogies and has kind of... I really admired this guy as an author and felt like he had a lot to offer and was based in a prestigious Ivy League university. Well, actually, you don't call it Ivy League, it's in the UK, do you? And that's, wait for it, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe by C.S. Lewis.
Oh, no, that's a good one. Good choices.
So what I liked about that, I must admit, as a young teenage girl, was the female empowerment, because Lucy, particularly Lucy and her sister, were very, very much, it wasn't just about the kings, it was about them as queens, as young queens. So that one was kind of my go-to, and I always felt like there was a bit of girl rights in there with that. And I just loved the analogies, and I loved going through the portal to another world. So there you go, throwback. I'll call it Throwback Friday, shall I?
Absolutely. Good choices, Denise. We'll be talking with you next week.
Okay, you take care. See you, Laura.
You too. See ya.
Bye.
The National Party's Denise Lee on 95 BFM.